The Off the Ball Podcast Network. Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Now the Six Nations juggernaut is cranking up again, and to that end, we have dragged Keith Wood all the way up into studio. Hello.
There you go. How are you?
Great to have you with us. And Rory O'Connor of the Irish Independent, also great to have you with us as
Hi,
well.
Hi, Joe.
So we have England, Ireland at Twickenham, 3 o'clock Sunday. Before that, we have Wales, France in Cardiff, and then maybe the Italians' best chance of a win, Scotland in Rome. So this weekend will be decisive on a few fronts.
Yeah, they've had a break. I think a lot of guys will get some of the rough edges off. You know, it's been very, very physical for the first couple of weeks anyway. And you want a break. It's amazing, actually. It was funny, there used to be match after match after match forever, but now you need a break after 2 or 3 weeks. The level of the physical nature of the game just exacts a toll. You know, I think Ireland in particular would be thrilled to bits having managed to get 2 wins out of 2. New coach, new whole lot of things going on, and just take a breather for a while.
The 2 wins totally change the complexion of the break, don't they? You think this time last year, and it was the England defeat out of the traps, and then the break actually was in the build-up to the Italian game in Rome. That's a very long time to maintain excitement and hype for a game in Rome. So it's a much nicer kind of 2 weeks to enjoy almost for the players now.
Yeah, we haven't lost a run of ourselves yet either. You know, it hasn't been the sort of pure hyperbole of 2018 or the depression of 2019. So I think it's a little bit of...
Jury's still out is my sense, actually. I think people are saying, okay, this is very good, but as you said, no one's losing their mind just yet.
Yeah, well, they're at base camp, really, aren't they? They've done what they had to do. I think everyone will be reasonably satisfied with 3 home wins out of the Six Nations, and they've effectively achieved that. I mean, it will be a bit of a shock if Italy came and upset the apple cart there. So if they go to London and Paris and perform well, even if they don't get the result, I think people will be... We'll see that as a pretty okay Six Nations. I mean, based on the place we've come from, now that you've given yourself the opportunity, you want to go and take it. But it's two places we traditionally go and struggle, and it's on the back of last year. So I think they were unimpressive in the first game, although everyone keeps telling us how good Scotland were that day. They were quite impressive against Wales while leaving some points out there. But really, we're getting the true test of where they are this Sunday. And, you know, we can judge them to a degree every time, but... It'll only be after 5 games we'll really know where they stand.
Yeah, I think we need a win away. I think at the point of where we are at the moment, if we were to say that, well, that's okay, we'll win one more game and lose two, would we be relatively content? Absolutely not. And it's trying to get ourselves to that idea of going to Twickenham. It's funny, it's like we were chatting earlier on, the whole Twickenham conversation being... this is a group of players that have grown up not being afraid of Twickenham, you know, not being afraid of what it is, what it takes to go over there. And it's getting that head around that idea, not being afraid of winning. And like, I came from a time where it was a monument to grey and defeat. It was a horrible place. You go in the door and you'd feel a bit depressed, and you know, you're afraid of almost embarrassing yourself yet again, because there was a lot of those days that we had. So these guys haven't had that so much, you know. They have access to those wins. They do know what it's like to beat England, and to, even though the last performance that they had against England was brutal, and I mean that for even Eddie Jones' version of brutal, it was hard, aggressive, heavy hitting, knocking over, destructive, intimidating. We were absolutely second best this time last year, but now, partly because of the composition of England, partly because there's a little bit of a smiley face kind of going on at the moment, I don't think we look at this game with a high level of trepidation.
Certainly not the way we might have when England were dispatching New Zealand in the World Cup semi-final. Around then, it seemed like a daunting trip, but less so now, partly because we're not as sure where England are as well.
Well, they've got to be damaged by the final. You know, I know that, like, they had a World Cup that if they'd set out to get to a final and produce a era-defining performance against New Zealand, they would have probably, apart from Eddie Jones and maybe the players, but or a few KPI kind of thing, they would have gone, that's a pretty good result, that's a good return from a World Cup. But when you get hammered in a final and your scrum gets destroyed in front while the world is watching, and you come home and you have a whole season ahead of you. That's got to be damaging to you. And even, like, Ireland are obviously have a bit of damaged goods over the World Cup, but England will have that too. And then you get emasculated in Paris after your coach bigs you up to such a degree that you're going to bring absolute brutality, and you don't. You get overrun in the first 60 minutes. So yeah, they're definitely not in the place that they were going into that first game last year, or going to that New Zealand game, but they're still a very, very good side. Although, you know, without Vinopoli, you just don't know how good they actually are.
And you said Jones was quiet last week on Thursday. He was
It's a different dynamic. We're adjusting to a post. I mean, Warren Gatland said it to you in here that he felt he could get under Joe Schmidt's skin. I've sensed that other coaches, they don't feel like that with Andy Farrell. So they don't see that there's much value in trying to get under his skin. That it's just he's a different character. He doesn't take as much seriously. It'll be interesting to see how Jones plays the rest of the week. Mm. But he was very much, they're a good team, good players, great coach. I'm looking forward to it. And you know, I've been reading his book. I did a profile of him today.
Is it any good?
The bits of it are good. Yeah.
That was probably post World Cup.
Yeah, around Christmas. He kind of rushed the World Cup bit, but there was a lot in the other bits. But he talks about why he does that, and it's partly to provide entertainment. And Sonny McLaughlin got it out of him on the BBC very well. It's partly entertainment, but he does see value in trying to undermine the opposition's tactics and goad them into doing something.
Yeah, he also has a responsibility for it, you know, his responsibility to... I mean, I couldn't get over his complaining about the fact that the people were booing or giving him a hard time, you know, when he'd been winding them up for the previous 2 weeks. I mean, come on, cause and effect.
He seems to love a good story about people abusing me in the streets.
Yeah, there's one.
His go-to story.
There's one on the eve of the game last year. He says he went for a haircut in Dublin and got accosted by some fellow with a camera phone. And it's like everywhere he goes. And he says that's part of the job. But I'm pretty sure if you talk to any other international coach, they don't get that.
No.
I don't think it's part of the job at all.
No.
I think if you're winding up everybody and looking for it, and he says he's trying to do it for entertainment. Whose entertainment? His own entertainment, maybe, you know, and so he's going to get a bit of grief over
I'm fully entertained as well, by the way. Long may he continue, because otherwise it would be a drab week's build-up.
Yeah, maybe a bit of that too, but I don't know. I was at that semi-final game in Japan, and God, it was a joy to watch. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's hard saying that when you're looking at England too, but it was a joy because the way they played, the style in which they played, and the way they dismantled New Zealand was fantastic. And then it was a joy the following week to watch South Africa dismantle them too. And the mix. So everybody talks about the scrum and everybody talks about the power. And we've been talking about power all the time, especially with Billy Vunipola. Mm. But the joy of the South African game was looking at the small guys, Cheslin Kolbe and scoring, and Faf de Klerk being truly, astride the world stage, no bother to them, very easily kind of scampering away at the end of the game, and they won, winning away. So I think everybody was damaged from it. So I've been interested to see how people deal with that or not deal with it. We get criticised for the fact that we weren't flying against Scotland. I think baby steps were pretty good, and I thought we got the results, so I was happy. I mean, I wasn't, there's people kind of wailing and gnashing in teeth, but we'd beaten Scotland. I was kind of, We've done well.
I've seen, as you mentioned, those two games. If Andy Farrell had the time to have a watch again of the World Cup final, is there anything from the South African performance that Ireland can realistically bring to Twickenham?
I don't know that that's necessarily the right thing. I think it's foolhardy for us to try and follow a South African manner of playing.
Yeah,
they're big, huge. So, yeah, we talk about the small guys. The small guys can exist because the rest of them are giants. Mm. So, you know, it's no harm having people
destroy them in the scrum.
The only thing is that it just showed how human they are. I mean, England were so good on front football in Dublin and Twickenham last year in the warm-up game. But when they put Ben Youngs and Owen Farrell under pressure, and when they got slow balls, suddenly the passes weren't sticking. Suddenly everything, they just didn't look as assured. But that's the same with any team. It's across the board.
I think that's essential. I think you have to stop. I think you need a hard press defence all the time, especially against powerful teams. You can't let them get ahead of it. But I also think the beating of New Zealand for England took so much out of them.
Yeah.
You know, even the high, the emotional high, which is great, but actually it was a week later they had to go and play a final, and like what they had put themselves through, this is like, we can't look at that and with any joy. We've never got to that stage, no mind get to the stage after. They went through amazing things to get there and then got bullied. You know, so look, I love the fact that that power is part of the game, but I love it when it's mixed and blended properly. And so for 12 months, or pretty much 12 months, England had got that power game unbelievably right until they met somebody more powerful, and then it wasn't. But it's why South Africa have the ability to beat New Zealand and have beaten them more than anybody else. But it's also the how New Zealand have the ability to be able to beat South Africa. They use guile and speed and sleight of hand far more than the pure power. But it's when they mix them up together, it just makes it, it's a potent mix, you know.
I'll come back to that point, actually, in a few minutes. Just a few pieces of housekeeping and a few things to pick your brains on. If people didn't catch much of the Pro 14 action over the weekend, Munster hammered the Southern Kings, Leinster beat the Cheetahs 36-12, Connacht beat Cardiff 29-0, and Ulster lost away to Ospreys 26-24. Amongst other headline news, Ronan Kelleher got game time. I think Will Connors was man of the match for Leinster. Dave Heffernan was man of the match as well for Connacht. Anything else people should know?
Just a lot of the tries were scored by Ireland squad members. It was 13 released, and it seems like they've come back at a good level and they've gone and done what Andy Farrell wanted to show their hand. At the same time, I think if you weren't in Cork last weekend, you're probably not going to be playing this weekend. There's a full round this weekend as well, so I'd say a lot of those players will go back to the province as well to keep sharp. But Kelleher's an interesting one. I mean, Rob Herring's done well. I don't expect him, he doesn't deserve to be dropped. But I think one of the reasons Kelleher missed out was because he hadn't played for 6 or 7 weeks before the Six Nations started. He got that, unfortunately, timed injury. That's good that he's got a good chunk of work under his belt, because if he is needed, that just battle hardens him that little bit more, because he'll need to be. You can't just throw him into a Six Nations game on the back of that. But I think, going back to ever since Joe Tripp was in the job, it's been very hard to break into a Six Nations squad on the back of Pro 14 performances, because the level is so far off.
In terms of team news, the consensus seems to be Caelan Dorris is going to come back in on the bench ahead of Max Deegan. Is that what you're hearing?
Not hearing anything as such. It's kind of an estimation. It's very hard to change that winning back row. And Dorris got the nod for training ahead of Deegan. Deegan was sent back to play for Leinster, so there's kind of an assumption there. Yeah. And he was picked ahead of him. But it's hard to see him leaving O'Mahony out on the back. I thought he was very good against Wales. Mm. And if you're going to be, you know, if you're going to call for everyone to back on form, it's going to be harsh to make those changes. I do prefer the back row with Dorris in it, but I think that may be an Italy call.
And why is that? The most common critique I hear is there's not enough of a ball-carrying presence in the back row.
I think there's better balance. I think Stannard's better in six. I know he's won two Man of the Match awards pretty much at eight for the last two games, but I think you put him at six and you put Dorris's mix of being able to do physically but also run an open country, to pass the ball, to link the play. He's a breakdown threat as well. I think he is your number eight for the future. Sure. So O'Mahony is a hybrid of the two, but he doesn't carry the ball enough, although he did carry the ball quite well against Wales, I thought. So I think he deserves to keep a spot, because he's got in there and he did the job, and I think it would be very hard to take him out of there. But I think long term, your back row should be probably Stander, Van der Vleer, or Levy if he ever gets back to the level that we know he can, and Dorris.
I know I said this a few weeks ago, and just as to trying to figure out who'd be in the mix and how they'd go, I still feel the idea of having a captain on the field at the end of the game is very important. And I'm not saying that has to be Peter Mahoney's role from here on in to be the guy on the bench to be able to go and do it, but he is a guy people follow. Mind you, they haven't had to go very far to follow him in the last few weeks. He's played phenomenally well. And it'll be interesting to see, because I don't know that there's a bad decision to be made there. I don't know, and that's not sitting on the fence. We have to start thinking of what happens within the last 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. We have to start thinking about the composition of the 23 and to try and get over, and I don't know if I could get over it, but the idea of, well, I'm not starting, you know, but I am there to not just finish it, but to lead it, to make that work. But I just think there's an awful lot of time left in Peter O'Mahony. Even though people say, yeah, he's wrecked a lot of the time, I think it's a huge amount of time if he's managed properly. And we want to get the last bit, because he's got something rare, you know, and something a bit of a throwback. So I don't want to just say, well, yeah, he may not fit into identikit of what we're looking for at the present moment in time. And Caelan Dorris does fit into that. So I think you might be able to get the best out of both and have an easy way in for a young guy that's trying to get onto the international scene.
O'Mahony is an interesting case, and what was said about him over the last couple of weeks a lot was that if you look at his stats, that consistently his numbers of tackles and carries and all the various metrics that we, you know, rush to after a game, they aren't consistently high. But the other side of that coin is he comes up in big games with big moments. And I was never entirely sure if this was a critique of Omahanis or if actually this was a big compliment of Omahanis. It often depended who was delivering the message. Is that a fair assessment of his game?
I think statistics tell a huge amount, but don't tell the whole story. And I would say as an emotional heartbeat, we have to remember that rugby sport is emotional. Rugby in particular is emotional. And you need people who are able to get to a certain pitch. Mm. He is. I've read some of the critiques on it to say if you're looking for a guy who wants to growl and look mean, he's the man. You know, and that's definitely meant as a negative. But his effectiveness at times is essential. And I don't think he wastes too much time and effort. And you say the same about Jamie Heaslip, that his stats were amazing for what he would do, and he would do a huge amount. But it never got over the gain line. At the end of his career, his stats had kind of changed, had moved into a very different type of them. But O'Mahony is a total nuisance. Like, he's a pain in the neck for the opposition all the time.
And is it all the time? Because the critique would be, well, he's drifts out of games.
No,
where has he been?
I actually think at times he's looked tired in the last 12 months. And I think you can see him dipping into some well of something primal to try and get there and to try and play. And he's looking for something very different. But and there's times that just hasn't worked for him. And I really think some of these guys need a bit of a break and we need to manage them well. I do. Mm. But in this instance, is why you should pick him is his vertical jump is amazing, both on our ball and on opposition ball. Yeah. So it's much easier to be lifted. His reading of that is fantastic. He's in the right place at the right time. He runs that fat man track. That's amazing. He's the shortest possible route from A to B to be where the ball is going to be. He's often there. He snaffles an awful lot of ball. You know, that doesn't count as an extra 3 or 4 tackles, because maybe he's not. But he's always in a spot. He's always in the eye of a player that's playing against him. So a lot of things happen away from him. And that's maybe part of the...
Yes, okay. It's harder to measure, yeah.
I think so. I think he's a bit of an outrider as well. You know, I think he's a little bit different.
I think you're right. And I think, I don't think he had a great season since the World Cup. But it's important to remember that against New Zealand, he was the only player who made any impact in terms of stemming the tide on that day. He won a line out against the head and he won a breakdown turnover that led to Ireland getting good field position. Mm. I think in the build up to the turnover, the Seve Reese turnover that went to the other end of the pitch. But in that game, when pretty much everyone around him wilted, he stood tall. And I think that is where his value is. It's that he's not going to make 20 carries a game, 20 tackles a game. He used to do more of that. If you look at it, there is a steady decrease in the amount of involvements he has in that way. But I think his turnovers and his line-out steals have gone up. So he's redefined himself as a player. But when his form dips and when he's not able to affect those big moments, that's when his stats start to appear glaring. Because CJ Stander is always going to give you 20 of each. Mm. And they're going to be more effective. And he is going to show up more in that way. So I think O'Mahony, kind of, if you're going to be a big moments player, you've got to deliver those big moments. And I think for Munster this season, probably because he was psychologically damaged from the World Cup, which, you know, he's 30, he probably won't get back to another one. That's such a career blow for him, and he's come back and it's a 13-month season. And I think it maybe affected him more than it affected some of the other players, I'm not sure, but he definitely dipped. But I think it's almost that's the thing that people argued about Conor Murray, that by being left out of that first game, it maybe gave him the kick that he needed, that gave him a shake to say, I'm not guaranteed my place anymore, and he got that chance after 5 minutes. And I think he's played quite big in those first two games, and I thought he threw him, even though he wasn't making massive yards, there's times when he carries and you can see he's almost going to ground before the tackle comes in. It goes back to that Jamie thing. It's almost like, I need to get the ball back. It's not, I need to win the collision. Whereas against Wales, I thought he was carrying, not too high, but he was carrying much more upright, so that it was more about winning the collision.
It's funny
and then
you say
getting
that.
It
I thought Stander was doing something similar as well, actually.
Yeah, Stander, I think, has nearly always done it. Maybe they're being coached to do it a little bit higher than they were, because Joe was all about body position. But there was times when I thought Pete was almost going to the ground to avoid the contact, so that he could get the ball back and have a carry without actually really engaging his body in it.
The 60%
man. He's not protecting himself.
In Joe Schmidt's eyes. Yeah. You know, you've got to make sure we recycle this ball. There was such an emphasis on the breakdown. Maybe
partly, but also protect yourself. Because Peter's body has taken a lot of punishment over the years.
Right.
And I think maybe he was protecting himself a little bit, but he's realised, and maybe Andy Farrell said it to him, that's not, if you're going to be in this team, you've got to win more collisions.
I'm not sure about that. And I would look at the protecting of yourself. It's very hard to, you protect yourself by tucking your elbow in.
Yeah.
You know, before you fall. But it isn't as if you're taking anything off. It's quite amazing, and there's a full speed way of doing, you know, of playing at international rugby. The last thing you could actually consider it is being self protection, but it is about making the most tiny little adjustments. But I would still go back to a simple idea. I want him thereabouts.
Right.
Because he offers something very different.
Okay. Now, as always, our rugby coverage is brought to you with thanks to Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in.
Andy Farrell then, as you said, Rory, he's been talking about the Shakespearean aspect to this drama. He says, I know, it's weird, isn't it? So even he's acknowledging this is a bit strange. The hardest part is certainly for Colleen and own sisters and the young fella, Gabriel. It's weird for them. They've got unbelievably mixed emotions. And then he was asked, you know, as a parent, how can you look at your son and not want him to go well? He said, when you're a coach, you don't feel like that. You don't hope it goes well. You're assessing things. You're busy in your mind as a coach. You've got a distraction. Obviously, we're making quite a bit of this, but I mean, he has planned for his son several times over at this stage. He has, I have no doubt, stood in defence meetings with the team and said, we need to smash the number 10 because that's just what happened. But obviously, it's more of a talking point this week.
Yeah, I thought I was down. It was the first time he's actually spoken about it. He was in Cork last week in the Riverlea Hotel, and I think he decided it was a small enough gathering. Let's get this out of the way. Let's address it. And because he was defence coach obviously against Owen a couple of times, he always went, "Ah, look, it's just normal. We're just professionals." But he opened up a little bit about it. He stayed in Japan for the last 2 weeks of the World Cup after Ireland had gone and everyone else had gone home. He stayed with his wife and kids to watch Owen in the semi-final and the final. And he said that was much harder than coaching against them, that he went on the train with the fans, he went with the parents, and he watched his son play for England in a World Cup semi-final and a final as a dad and not as an opposition coach. And he said that was really, really difficult. Much more difficult than what he's doing now. And I guess that's just the professional. The man who's been a professional since he was 16, whose son, I think, was around the Saracens and Wigan training grounds the whole way growing up, who himself grew up in professional rugby. And Owen was supposed to replace Andy as a sub while Eddie Jones was coach at Saracens in a game against, I think it was the Western Force. And he was supposed to play alongside him for Saracens, and Andy got injured and he ended up coming on as a sub for him. So even then, they were teammates for a little while, or they were in the same squad. So I think it is normal for him. I think he's normalised it.
Yeah.
And I don't think any of us will ever get our heads around it. Like, it seems so, so strange. I've had my dad as my own coach, and that's difficult enough. But to have your dad coaching against you...
I knew there was a reason you got your game.
But Andy knows everything, strength and weakness about Owen. He's coached him on everything. He's been probably his private counsel for his whole way up. I mean, how much of that does he use? I mean, there's got to be some boundaries that he doesn't want to cross. But at the same time, I don't know, Keith, you might have a perception of it, but such a difficult one.
I think it's a lovely story.
Oh, it is, yeah.
You know, and it is, again, it's a human story in the midst of a fairly tribal rivalry. And I imagine they'll talk this week. I can't see why they wouldn't. I think that would be unnatural if they didn't. But they're not going to be going into tactics. And they're going to be slagging the hell off each other.
I would have thought so.
Could you imagine the amount of, you know, gowling around that they'd be doing, you know? Just why wouldn't they, you know? And I don't know, I think it's what's rare is beautiful, as they say. But you know, to be coaching against your son must be confusing. And like, it not at all for Owen. He's just going out to do his own job. He'll just do his job. But I think Andy'll be doing the exact same. But he's able to sit quietly with it. He's not concentrating. It's like I heard somebody talking about crowds during the week. You know, once you step out onto the field, you don't notice the crowd.
Yes.
You hear the noise, but you're not. You're just saying, this is atmosphere. This is kind of part and parcel of it.
There's too much going on for both of them to be overly focused on. Although I did hear a great story from someone over the weekend on the Dublin hurling circuit. I won't name names, but there was a father-son, and father was coaching the opposition team. And he knew that his son, who was a defender, had no pace.
Right.
So when the game started, all the other five forwards were pulled out and he left his son isolated against a small nippy fella, and two goals were scored in the first 10 minutes. Yeah. It's the most ruthless example.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that too, yeah, that's okay.
Gotta win.
Will Ireland win is the question. I'm asking you this without seeing teams, which I know is difficult. Tuilagi's back, if we're talking about heft and bulk. Slade is back, he hasn't played in 2 months. It does give maybe Jones more of an option of putting Farrell at 10 as opposed to 12, although all the indications are it will be Ford at 10 and Farrell again at 12. But Tuilagi is most certainly back. What are our feelings at this stage?
I don't think we're as reliant on high kicking balls as we were, even though we do it from the Gary Owen. I think England are favourites to win because they're playing at home, and I think it'll be very hard for us to win. I do think we of course we can win, but I think we're in a pretty good place and a good space. So if we set up with a high level of discipline, with that really high defensive push, I think we have a really good chance to do it. It's funny, I went to this game in the Aviva last year, and I said I can't wait to do it, and that was just a seismic change as to how one team was going to play. I've watched England in a lot since, because there's an awful lot to admire in how they play. They don't have that full pressure capacity without Billy Vunipola. They really don't. And I don't know if they're going to stick with Curry at 8. He's a fantastic player, but that suits us. To have, you know, instead of having a big heavy, you know, so if they had their balance of big heavy ball carriers and Tuilagi's back and powering back, they can put us under a huge amount of pressure. And so I think there could be a lot of cancelling each other out, and I think it will be a really, really hard, tough physical game, all done on the gain line. So discipline will come down to be incredibly important.
And you mentioned the game in Dublin last year and the New Zealand semi-final. When England start fast, there's no catching them. That's the other crucial thing, the other crucial aspect of this game. I mean, they line out in Dublin and Tuilagi and boom, and then New Zealand, they scored a try in 2-3 minutes, I think, from memory.
It was pretty much the same. It was a very similar.
Yeah. So, I mean, even to use the greatest cliche in all the sport, first 5-10 minutes is kind of crucial, particularly against this England
team. I think increasingly the scoreboard, I mean, it's always been your friend in rugby, but I think in the last, I don't know, is it just the last 10 years I've become aware of it, but how important managing it is. And it's becoming increasingly hard to come back. You know, if you get 2 scores ahead, you're going to win the game nearly 9 times out of 10. I think you have to appreciate where you're going. I know Ireland's record has been better, and 2 years ago it was one of the probably the best performance and result in Twickenham. But I mean,
on the coldest day ever.
It looks like it might be similar this weekend. I think it's only 18 away wins in the whole history of the championship, going back to the 1870s against England. I think 14 of them are in Twickenham. Each one of them has its own story, and they're all legendary in their own right. And you can think of the Shane Horgan try. You can think of Gervin Dempsey's try, going back to Ginger McLaughlin and Simon Gagan, and all these great days. And they're great days because they're hard to achieve. And I think even now, it's still a massive achievement to go there and win. I think to go and perform and run them close would be okay. I know I think it would be great to see them go and win and take a step forward, but there's got to be scar tissue from last year, not just the Six Nations game, but also the warm-up game, the 2 defeats to Saracens for Munster and Leinster, which were both predicated on being out-muscled by pretty much the same pack. If Ireland can live with that pack and even thrive against that pack on Sunday, they've made progress. And if they can, they have a really good chance of winning the game. But it's probably going to take something we're going to be talking about for 20, 30 years afterwards, and because that's what winning Twickenham is.
And happy to do that. I'm not sure about the scar tissue, and I know they've lost, but these guys are playing big matches all the time. If they were to bear scar tissue for every loss they'd have, they wouldn't get out of bed in the morning. And I think on the chance to go to Twickenham to win, you said it entirely, the cliche. The first 5 or 10 minutes in the Aviva last year, there was 3 or 4 training ground plays that absolutely destabilised us. The same actually against New Zealand. Totally. So we have to be in a position where we don't wait for anything. So we are just hitting everything that moves at the very start and get yourself into the game. You know, it's like playing France from 20 years ago. if you were able to stay with them for 20 minutes, you then had a chance.
You could breathe.
But yeah, you could be 40 points down if you didn't in 20 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it is about, you know, trying to remember some of the things of the past.
And, yes.
Yeah.
Very quickly, because I've let this time, I've let this slot get away from us time-wise. Wales against France, Sean Edwards, the central figure. They know his defence. He knows their attack. It's sort of a litmus test in a way for both sides. Wales post-Scotland off a defeat. And then, you know, the Italians in Paris was a game they were always going to win. But can the French back up what they did against England? So that is going to be a cracking game.
I think they can. And I think Wales are really, really struggling for players at the moment. They just they have a bad injury list, you know. And we've talked about everybody else being scarred. They got to a semi-final and yet they're scarred.
It's taken more out of them.
It's taken an awful lot out of them, you know. So...
Leaning toward France here?
No, I'd be more. I think France are a little bit like Ireland. They've won their first two games at home. Now they're going on the road with a new coach and a load of new players. Ireland don't have the new players, but they've a new coach. It's a litmus test for them. I don't see a Grand Slam this year, and I think this is where France come undone. Probably this is where Ireland come undone as well, and that's why it's going to probably go towards the last weekend. But I do think with their talent and their ability that they're in it. They're like, it's again, it's going to be a tight game, but I just think Wales at home might just have enough.
I don't think they could play against Italy. I think they just said, we're going to beat Italy, we just need to get out of the way.
Yeah.
I think they'll be fully focused on this. Mm. And this is the interesting, you know, for Ibanez and for Galtier. And then you've got Sean Edwards coming, not back home, but back to his spiritual home of the last 10 or 12 years.
Centre circle with a French flag and stick it in the middle of Graeme Sinesta.
I think France.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that'd be some story.
Italy, Scotland, probably Italy's best chance. They have the Scots at home. We were talking about the gap, the gap week. That's been in Scotland full of Finn Russell, Gregor Townsend talk. Mm. As people know, Russell did an interview in the Sunday Times last week. He said, 8 years I've had him as a coach. I don't really know him at all. We don't have a personal relationship. The whole situation with Scotland has been made out to be about me wanting to have a drink. In fact, it's about control, respect and trust on and off the pitch. I saw Clive Woodward writing in the Mail this weekend, said he was sickened, was the word he used, with Russell's interview, called it a character assassination of Townsend. It crossed a line. If I was Townsend, I would issue a simple statement. If Russell does not apologise, he will not play for Scotland while I am coach. So that is a bit of a mess for Townsend to try and negotiate. It's very difficult when you're Townsend and you don't have many world-class players. If Russell is saying to the whole country, while he's there, I'm not here, that just shortens the leash you have as a coach for things to go right.
I think everybody seems to be doubling down.
Yeah.
And that makes it very hard. And look, I looked at it, and when Russell brought out that article, I said, that's not great. Mm. If I was Townsend, I wouldn't have responded. I'd have just said, let him. That's what he says. That's what he believes. Let him off. Mm. And I think the coach has to be above that. And I, you know, and so a lot of the comments that came out from it was that it wasn't coming from Townsend, that it was from the players saying, listen, we're all sticking into this together. Mm. These are the things we've all signed up to, and we're signing up to them. Mm. And he didn't want to do it. So you do have to have a sense of discipline within it. You have to have a sense of oneness within it. Look, I'm coming from me. I argued with all my coaches because that was kind of par for the course, because you challenge everything.
But this for Townsend, you can't go to Rome and lose, that's for sure, with this going on.
Oh, no. I mean, he's been unlucky. Like, they play well against Ireland and lost, and they were in the game against England and lost, and you know, either of those results go your way, he's, you know, Mick McCarthy in Japan, you know, kind of putting Roy Keane behind them. But as long as results go against him, it's still hanging on, it's still hanging around, it's a bad smell. You know, he can't move on from it. And I don't think losing to Italy would compound it. I don't think beating Italy puts it to bed either. It's going to rumble on.
No, rumbles.
It's a small country with, you know, this is the focus.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be a story forever, whether Gregor likes it or not.
Before we go, we should mark the passing of Gareth Fitzgerald. He was Munster CEO from 1999, retired last summer, passed away aged just 65. An immense contribution to Munster by all accounts, and equally by all accounts, a lovely man.
Well, indeed. And for I knew him, he was my first coach with Munster back in the early 90s, which is kind of saying something. A good, strong, solid, capable, moved from the amateur to professional, But when you look at the things that had happened in his tenure, there were a couple of Heineken Cups. There was the High Performance Centre moving to Limerick, which for a Corkman, there was a lot of things with the two, Thoma Park, the total rebuild of all of that, and the amount of work that had to happen with all of that. And he'd been sick for numerous times over it. And, you know, he was obviously sick when he retired last year. You just wanted him to have a bit more time to look at it and enjoy it from afar and see the outstanding work that he had done in that time.
Yeah, well, our condolences to all concerned. Yeah, absolutely dreadful news. Rory O'Connor of the Irish Independent, thank you. Keith Wood, pleasure to have you in the studio.
And you.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of Us. Everyone in.
That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.